Moving on now to another identity and the possibility of Scotland being independent. I'm joined by Angus Miller, a student here and a member of the SNP. On Monday this week, David Cameron and Alex Salmond staged a formal signing of an agreement which will pave the way for Scotland holding a referendum on independence in the autumn of 2014. Over the next 2 years, we can expect significant debate over the rights and wrongs of independence. But today we're going to focus on the process which will take us through to that date and beyond. Angus joins me now. Thank you for coming on the programme.
Good evening.
So, the SNP's reason to exist is independence. How are the party reacting at the moment now they know that moment's going to come where they get that decision? It's going to be forced one way or the other in the next 2 years.
Well, I think there's a lot of excitement within the SNP just now. This is something that the party has worked for tirelessly for its whole life. But over the last sort of 5 years, since it's been a credible force in Scottish politics, when it's shown the people of Scotland that it can really govern, that's when people have been really galvanised. They've seen that this is a party that can lead Scotland in the right direction. And when you couple that with the evidence from devolution with the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrat Party and the good things that they also brought for Scotland, together they really prove that there's a good argument for independence, and increasingly people are seeing that.
I'm interested that you immediately point to the fact that the SNP have done a good job in office as you see it. So, obviously an independent Scotland wouldn't constantly have the SNP in power, that you would guess there'd be some breakup of the parties. Would the SNP cease to exist?
Well, that's actually something that I'm quite interested in. I don't know the answer to that, honestly. And I don't think there's an official SNP position on that either. Personally, I think the SNP has managed to carve a very special social democratic identity within Scottish politics. It's been a major challenge to the Labour Party by showing that it can embrace Scotland's communitarian social democratic values. It can deliver for the people of Scotland with policies that benefit people from all walks of life. But that it can do so with a record of competency that maybe in the last couple of decades people have seen to be lacking in Scotland with the Labour Party. So I think there's definitely a very social democratic or at least centre-left identity to the SNP, and I think that would live on in an independent Scotland. How the other parties choose to react to independence, would Labour continue in its present form? The Conservative Party is the Conservative and Unionist Party. Would that continue to exist? So I think independence would, over the course of the coming decade afterwards, would really, it's kind of an unknown as to what would actually happen to the specific parties. The people in them, the people that drive the parties, would keep the values, but how they choose to organise themselves is a question that's yet to be answered.
I know that you point to the SNP's record in government as a way of this decision being made. Obviously, the SNP aren't the only party in favour, and there are visions for an independent Scotland that aren't based on the SNP's version of that. To what extent do you think the campaign's going to be based on the SNP's vision, and to what extent can it actually unite people across the different parties in a non-partisan way?
Of course, and the SNP is the largest party within the Yes Scotland campaign, but it's not the only voice. It's very important that you have these other voices. I'd just like to pick up on something you said, actually, at the beginning. I'm not personally a member of the SNP. I'm very supportive of the SNP as a party, but I'm not personally a member. And our society here in St Andrews is the Students for Independence group, which doesn't just promote the SNP. We promote all parties that support independence, and we encourage dialogue amongst our members so that we can have a debate about what an independent Scotland should look like. And I think that's very important. And that mirrors the current debate that's going on within even the Yes Scotland campaign. Yes Scotland is the campaign group for a yes vote in the independence referendum in 2014. And we have the SNP, Scotland's governing party, is obviously a major factor in that. But there are also the Scottish Green Party, Scottish Socialist Party, the Solidarity Movement, and a number of prominent independent figures as well. You said, how much can Scotland's, can the SNP's vision be taken as the general vision for an independent Scotland? I think that's a very important point. What is really important to realise in the independence debate is that as much as the SNP might be presenting their policies for an independent Scotland, and they will do so with a full white paper published in autumn 2013, but as much as they may be proposing what they want to see in an independent Scotland and what they will be negotiating with the UK government for, an independent Scotland will be whatever the people of Scotland vote it to be. So whether that be, you know, a Labour Scotland, an SNP Scotland, a Conservative Scotland even, God forbid, and that would change all the time. So parties will put what they want to see in Scotland into the manifestos, and elections will be carried out just as before.
Does that not make it quite difficult, though, for the public? Because although, of course, the official position is the Yes campaign has not just the SNP, it has other parties who are considerably smaller in it. Whatever that they say, the public will take it as being the SNP. That's what we get for independence. That's what we get continually. That's how they're going to view it.
Well, I think that's a very unfortunate perception that maybe some people do have. And part of that is, I think, the media has been portraying it in that way. Not necessarily as, you know, I'm not accusing them of a conspiracy against the SNP, but it's very hard for political journalism, for the media, and for even, you know, the ordinary person in the street to get out of the mindset of party politics. You know, when debate between the SNP and the Greens over specific policy, for example, is portrayed as a split, that's unfortunate, because really what they're doing is they're arguing how best an independent Scotland could be achieved and what would be best going forward with that. I think it's important to disconnect the party political debate, which is always going to be ongoing, and the debate for independence, which is really about decisions being made in Scotland for people of Scotland by the people of Scotland. And that isn't party political for me at all.
So you told me at the start, before we came on air, that you're a second year here. We can take it you're still going to be here at university when
yes.
the referendum comes up, as will I. So what can we expect from the students supporting Yes, and indeed from the students not represented here supporting the No campaign? What sort of things are we as students here going to see over the next few years?
Well, so far the campaign has been starting from scratch, so to speak. My group, Students for Independence, I'm secretary of that just now, that was launched as the St Andrews branch of SNP students last year, about February time, and we actually only affiliated in the second half of last semester. We've now changed to Students for Independence, and we really will be launching a number of events to bring the message of what independence is to the people in St Andrews. So things will start quite small, but as we get closer and closer to the referendum, we'll be holding a lot more events, we'll be doing a lot more campaigning to be able to really deliver the message of the benefits that independence could bring for everybody who lives here, regardless of where they come from. But, you know, if they're resident in Scotland, they all have, you know, benefits to be had from Scotland being independent. As for the other side, so far I haven't seen the same sort of organisation as our side has had. And, you know, partly that's because they have a wider group of parties. You know, there wasn't before us, there wasn't an SNP group and a Greens group that needed to coordinate. They have, you know, Labour, Conservatives, the Liberal Democrats. They did, at the Freshers Fair, we had a lot of Yes Scotland campaign merchandise and leaflets. And all the other political parties who support the union did also have their leaflets. So far they've been doing it on some level. But we're yet to see, from what I perceive, a united campaign to promote the benefits of being in the union, which I don't really see are many, to be honest.
One of the things you mentioned there was about the people who are resident in Scotland getting to vote. A lot of our listeners come from around the world and live in St Andrews. Are you able to confirm which of them are actually getting a vote?
Mm-hmm.
The students here, will international students who happen to be resident here for their degree get to vote?
Well, I have to admit that I'm not completely knowledgeable about all the details here. This is actually something that I've looked into a number of times because it's quite interesting. You know, we're a very international university. What I can say is that if you're not registered to vote in Scotland, in St Andrews, then you will not be able to vote in the referendum. The voting is done on the same basis as the Scottish Parliament elections are held. So for that, you need to be a citizen of the United Kingdom. And my understanding is that given certain residency requirements, how long you've lived here, that can also be extended to the some citizens of the Commonwealth and other European countries. But for most people, you will not be able to vote unless you are a British citizen, and you certainly need to be registered in Scotland to vote.
And how are you going to find that in portraying the arguments to students when a fair number of them aren't going to be able to vote and maybe don't know as much coming from a different background? How's that going to work out for the campaigns?
No, I think that's a very interesting point. And what we've been seeing so far and doing a lot of events and talking to people in St Andrews, a lot of the international students, you know, their main questions are, how would this affect my visa, for example? So people are coming at here in St Andrews, in the student body, they're coming at it from a very different perspective from what we would see in a sort of typical Scottish constituency. What I think we need to do is we need to speak to the student population as a whole. And yes, we can address, you know, specific questions about visas, about, you know, Scotland standing in the world. These are all very important things that need to be talked about. But about how, as a young person living in Scotland, you know, if you chose to spend the rest of your life here, how that could actually, you know, how independence could bring benefits for you. And I think that's what you need to address it as, you know, because it's independence is a long-term thing. It's not going to happen in, you know, we're not going to have a vote in 2014, Independence Day 2016, and suddenly everything changes. You know, independence is going to be, in some ways, it's going to be not a change at all. And in many ways, it's going to be a huge change. So people would begin to notice it over a lifetime, you know, the changes that independence could bring. So, you know, how to target that specifically. Some people, I think you need to have a longer term argument.
Angus Miller, thank you very much for joining us. The debate will continue, I'm sure, over the next 2 years. And on Stair, we will, of course, keep you up to date with all of it as we go through that time. Still to come on Alexander Jones Live, we will be discussing the European Union and its relevance for us today. We've been just discussing Scottish identity. Now we'll be talking about European identity as well. And then at the end of the programme, we'll be talking to the senior student of Blackadder Hall. New Hall's been renamed Blackadder this week. It's gone through a change of identity itself, so we'll be discussing that as well. Coming up in just a moment is the latest from Star News. Remember, you can listen to the whole programme as a podcast on the Star News website. And you can, of course, get the latest podcasts from this show in the podcast section of that website. But for now, it's 5:30, so let's get the latest from Star News.
Newsweek magazine to end print publications this year.
And a Scottish man directs Antarctica's first feature film. Live from Star Studios, this is Star News.
With the 5:30 Star News, I'm Teddy Woodhouse.
And I'm Lucy Ware.
A new report published by researchers from St Andrews and partner universities has found that crowds are good for well-being. The study looked into the Mag Mela, the largest religious festival in the world. Millions of pilgrims partake each year and suffer difficult living conditions such as freezing temperatures, flooded tents, and rudimentary sanitation. However, most participants reported enhanced physical and mental well-being after the event. The researchers suggest that having a common purpose and identity fosters supportive relationships between people, especially in crowd situations.
A Scottish man working for the British Antarctic Survey has completed the first fictional feature film to be shot on the continent. The horror film, South of Sanity, follows staff at an Antarctic research station as they are pursued by a killer. Kirk Watson of Aviemore worked on the film as a way to pass the time during the long Antarctic winter. Fellow staffers helped out with the acting, editing and doing makeup for the horror film. South of Sanity will debut in Aviemore on October the 31st.
A report published today by former Labour MP Alan Milburn has urged English universities to give pupils from poor backgrounds guaranteed interviews and lower offers for foundational degrees. Milburn has called for universities to establish statistical targets for widening participation and to ensure their commitment for all outreach programmes to have, quote, maximal social impact. The report is expected to reignite debates surrounding social engineering in the university admissions.
Newsweek, a weekly American news magazine, announced today that it will be ceasing print publications at the end of December. After 80 years in print, the magazine will be going all digital. Editor-in-chief Tina Brown said that the challenging economics of print publishing and distribution led the decision, which will also include staff reductions across the company.
And the forecast tonight, rather cloudy with spells of light rain, quite persistent at first, but drier spells developing later.
And those are today's headlines. For more news... I do apologise. For more news, tune into our bulletin tomorrow at 5:30 or online anytime on the news section of the Star website.
Welcome back to Alexander Jones Live. Thank you to Star News for that. There will, of course, be more from them tomorrow at the same time. And you can catch the latest news bulletins online anytime on the Star website. Now we're discussing the European Union and the identity that that brings us now. Earlier today I was out on the street asking people what they thought about that. And hopefully when I can get it lined up on the computer, we will get to listen to that. I'll introduce you to producer Carla, who is here to talk to us about the European Union and to analyse the situation that we find ourselves in then. And a very mixed response from people there. So, Carla, maybe to start with, you could just give us an idea of the differences in the debate at the moment and the different views that people across Britain and across Europe have towards the European Union.
Well, I think a lot of people actually feel quite positive about the EU and just about all the benefits it brings and the kind of the collaboration that entails. Particularly, I think here with some of the opinions that you find, although there's a bit of a variety that many students do actually like the European Union, and perhaps that's because we're quite an international university and we do have a lot of continental European students here.
Thank you, Carla. We now have some views from people on the street today. I went out to find out what various people around St Andrews think about the European Union.
So, yeah, I'm a fan of the European Union. I think it's a good thing. It promotes international cooperation, and it's generally good.
It's useful, is it, do you think, for people in Britain, or do you think people in France and Germany gain more from it than we do?
I think certainly Germany doesn't gain as much, having the biggest economy in the Eurozone. I think that's one of the reasons we're not in the Eurozone, perhaps because we want to keep our financial independence, but there are certainly good aspects for everyone to benefit from it.
St Andrews is a very international university. Do you feel like you're more international, like you're more European being here, or do you still feel like a Brit?
I think I can feel both at the same time. I think there's a lot of countries in Europe and in the rest of the world are represented here, so I get a good exposure to other cultures and things, but I still feel British being still in Britain, and I think it's possible to be both.
So what do you think of the European Union?
I think it's great.
Why?
Because I think it's brought us peace for a long, long time. I actually lived in the war and afterwards lived in Germany too, seeing the destruction and all the... Yeah, so I think it's fantastic. That's number one. Secondly, it gives us fantastic opportunities to for our business and trade if we want to take it. We don't always take it. And it gives you young people a lot of scope to go and travel and live and be with other Europeans. No, I think it's fantastic.
And do you think it's given you a European identity?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Scottish, I'm British, I'm European.
And you feel quite comfortable holding all three of those identities?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I feel like the European Union is very useful for Europe. I feel like freedom, crossing borders is very useful. And I think it's important as well to have a united Europe because together we are stronger.
And you include we in that, so Britain's very much part of it.
I very much include Britain in that. I do not think that Britain can be independent from Europe in the modern world. We're just not big enough a country for it to be feasible. Our whole economy is built on banking, so, you know, that's essentially what I would say on that.
Just say that European Union is a political system, and it's not like a mess, but it has its own advantages and disadvantages. Maybe he's great in like united the countries, but he's not really good at economy and this kind of stuff. So that's what I heard.
Some views of St. Andrians towards the EU from earlier today. The European Union is, of course, in crisis at the moment, and there's another summit going on today about that. I'm joined by producer Carla, who is here to analyse the situation with us. And Carla, yet another crisis for the EU. It's not good news, is it?
No, particularly not. We look at the euro and how it's doing amongst other currencies. It's not something something to be particularly pleased or proud of, something to be grateful that we're currently sterling, because we're not heading downhill as the euro seems to be.
Now, obviously, I tried being the good broadcast journalist I am to get a balance of views out on the street. But in St. Andrews, we very much found a positive outlook towards the EU. It might be facing difficulties, but people recognised that it had a value. That's not a view that we see across all of Britain and all of Europe, even. We heard on that talk from the former Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer, and he was saying about Euroscepticism there, and it's definitely on the rise. Do you think that this is posing a formidable problem for the European Union, or is this just a sideshow?
I think at the moment that it's building, but it's not a threat currently. I think that people do, as seen from the views that you had from the people in St. Andrews today, that the view is generally a positive one. And like I said earlier, it could be because we're such an international university and we have so many people from all over continental Europe. But I think people are generally positive to stick with something that has been so positive for so many years and helped the countries and the culture stay together. I think we're reluctant to let go of such a good binding union.
One of the clips that you heard just then from the people on the street was an old man who had lived through the war, lived in Germany after the war, and he was very pro-European Union. But the reason he cited him for that was one of the peace that Europe had been kept in due to the European Union. Do you think that that's something that we can really hold the European Union to, or is it really just inconsequential aside?
Well, I think it can, and I think for people who have lived through the war or been part of a war, very unlike our generation today, that they can maybe appreciate. Because the EU was set up after World War II, that they can appreciate the values it's brought. Perhaps at this point, so many years after that, when we haven't had a world war, but there are wars going on and there's some obvious crisis, etc., going on in the EU. Perhaps we can't fully appreciate it as younger people, but I think it's definitely something that that does promote peace and shouldn't be neglected that way.
It's interesting that you mentioned about younger people there, because it's quite clear that that was the reaction that I got from the oldest person who I spoke to on the street. Very much the younger people were focusing on either the economic crisis or the opportunity that this offered them. I wonder whether young people actually associate the whole concept of peace with the European Union, or whether actually for them that's irrelevant and that's something that's going to die out, and whether that actually poses a threat to the European Union as we move away from its founding principle.
Well, of course, the younger generations are, I say this as part of one, but they are quite influential because, you know, we are the older generations to come. I think just having you said that and thinking of the varying opinions between the older people that were interviewed and the younger people, that perhaps younger people have different priorities, different thoughts in their mind. We haven't been at war as such, you know, since World War II. We haven't seen it firsthand, so we're concerned more about money and, you know, how we can have what's our money going to be worth, and, you know, will this make it more difficult? Perhaps even people are thinking about, you know, travel and a different mindset to the value of not being in a war-torn area and having to deal with that.
And there's one final point that I want to come on to, which is that of identity. And again, in the clip, we found people who were very willing to express a European identity and were willing to do that in conjunction with either a Scottish or Scottish and British identity. Mm. And that's something that we've had as a theme running through the programme today. And so before the break, we heard from Angus Miller, who was telling us about what he sees the benefits of a Scottish independence and a Scottish identity. Do you think that younger people feel increasingly European, or is this just a particular view we get being in St Andrews?
In honesty, I think it's a St Andrews view. This is a very unusual part of the United Kingdom and of Scotland. Sometimes it doesn't feel altogether like Scotland, which is good and bad in some ways. I think that wholly, particularly in the British Isles, that there is a bit of disconnect. I mean, there's a physical disconnect from continental Europe for us. I think people are more likely here to describe themselves as British or Irish or Scottish than European as their first identity. Whether this is a good thing or a bad thing depends on your opinion of the EU, I suppose. But I don't think young people here, from the people I know, see themselves as European as greatly as perhaps people would like to.
And obviously Scotland is saying that it would join the European Union. And one of the big points of contention at the moment is whether it would be forced to join the euro or not. Mm. The argument the SNP put forward is that they wouldn't, because they would continue to inherit the UK's opt-out and not having to do that. The argument that certain people within the European Union, it does seem a majority of scholars at the moment support, is that they would have to reapply as a new state and therefore would be forced into joining the European Union, euro even eventually. Mm. Is that going to be an issue, do you think, in the independence campaign? Because obviously this crisis is seen at the moment as being a big point. And so if people say, look, that's going to drag us in, do you think that could affect the outcome?
Yes, I do think so. Like I said, like younger people particularly are considering kind of maybe a different level to the war and the peace that we discussed earlier. And they're thinking about the economy. They're thinking about how much their money is going to be worth. Be interesting. Scotland breaks apart from Britain and still quite keen to keep sterling as their currency, although, you know, is from the crisis that we see, it is the smarter move. But I think people will definitely have that on their mind because there's such stigma around the euro as it is.
Yeah, it's interesting how much of an issue the European Union could actually be in this, considering many people like to think it leaves aside one thing and they can get on with their life despite it in Britain. Mm. The UKIP movement isn't as big in Scotland as it is in England. Do you think that that's actually a big political force now in the UK? And do you think that that's going to cause problems, in particularly for the Conservatives at the next election?
Sorry, do you mean the EU concept or
the United Kingdom Independence Party?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Do you think they're going to cause problems for the Conservatives at the next election? Because in many ways, they stole more votes away from the Conservatives than they lacked to form a majority. Is this a growing concern, do you think, in particular in England?
Yes, quite possibly. It does just depend how they see the EU in general, and whether altogether people can consider this and what kind of implications independence would have that they're not considering.
Carla, thank you.
Thank you.
Star. StAndrewsRadio.com. Evil on StAndrewsRadio.com.
On Monday, Newhall formally accepted that it is no longer that new. It changed its name to Agnes Blackadder Hall in honour of the first female graduate from St Andrews University. I'm joined now in the studio by the senior student of Blackadder Hall, Zeeshan Karim. Welcome, Zeeshan. Thank you for coming.
Hi, Alexander.
To begin with, could you maybe give us an outline of how the name change came about?
Yeah, sure. So Matthew Harrison was elected last year, back in October, and one of his promises were that he'd give all the students a chance to select a new name for Newhall. Now, when Newhall was built back in 1993, the name Newhall was only meant to be a temporary name. And so he formed a sub-panel with the committee members, the proctor, the head warden, Rob Warren, Chris Lusk, and a couple of other people. And one of the things they did was they... It was that they asked students to send in nominations. And so we received really funny nominations like Pink Prison or Cleese Court and so on. And so by the end, the nominations were such that it was Agnes Blackadder Hall, Steve Belisarius Hall, and three other ones that I can't remember right now.
So which one was it that you actually voted for last year?
Personally, I voted for Sir David Brewster Hall.
Okay.
Yes.
They're very prestigious.
Yes. He was a principal in the 19th century. He invented the kaleidoscope.
Okay. Yeah. And so the Blackadder, I understand, got a good majority.
Yeah, 42%.
A comfortable win for Blackadder. What was it, do you think, about that that pushed the students to choose that?
Well, the main reason was that, obviously, she was the first female graduate of the university, and secondly, it was Blackadder, and of course, Blackadder is a very famous TV show, so I think that definitely played a part.
Definitely. So, you mentioned that Agnes Blackadder, she was the first female graduate from the university. Is there anything else you can tell us about her?
Yeah, sure. So, she graduated in 1895 with an MA, and she went on to study in Dundee, I believe. She specialised in the field of science, and she played a prominent role with the suffragettes, and she also played a massive role with X-rays as well.
And I imagine that the principal, Louise Richardson, is quite proud of this name change. We know that she's particularly keen to push all matters of gender equality in the university. Do you think for her this symbolises quite a big change and quite a big step forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Agnes Blackadder is actually the first female name that's...
Yeah, first name to appear in the university.
Yeah, that's right.
So the changes to Newhall, it's now Blackadder Hall. What are you expecting will be changing to the student experience to be in Blackadder from being in Newhall?
I mean, previously you must know that our hall colours were red and black, and of course St Regulus Hall also shared the same hall colours. So when I was elected last year, one of my promises were to change the hall colours to blue and red. On top of that, I've introduced brand new positions within the committee, such as a formal dinner organiser, a charity rep, two inter-hall sports reps, advertising / PR reps. And on top of that, as I discussed before, I'm introducing brand new formal dinners within Newhall or within Blackadder Hall.
And how do those formal dinner work? Because obviously you don't have a structured time of meals some of the other halls. You're not paid at all.
So we have formal dinners once every semester. So this semester we have our formal dinner in the Scores Hotel on the 30th of November. And so that will obviously be a three-course meal.
And obviously Newhall Blackadder has 600 odd students in it. And I guess that this sort of thing is quite a small number going to it. What sort of numbers are you expecting at your formal dinner?
Approximately 150 students.
Yeah. So this is still a minority, a considerable minority of the hall. One of the complaints that was always made about Newhall was the whole community, and it didn't have quite the sense of some other halls. How do you envisage trying to change that for Blackadder?
Yeah, I mean, our Freshers Week was absolutely successful. I mean, for our Clan Warfare, we had about 120 students. Pub Crawl, minimum 150 students. Garden Party, approximately 200 students. And we would have ideally have liked all the maintenance works have finished by September. However, the residential business services actually began the works in September. So right now we have no common room, we don't have a games room, we don't have a music room. So the only communal space we have right now is the bar area.
So with all those works going on, what sort of timetable are you envisaging before the business services get that all done and you can get the common spaces back again?
Well, that should be done by the 30th of November, hopefully.
And you believe that's on course at the moment?
Yes.
That's good. So what other activities are you planning for the hall? What things are you doing once you've got your spaces back?
I mean, space isn't really an issue for now. I mean, tomorrow night we have our first Blackadder pub crawl since Freshers Week. And on the 31st of October we have our Trick or Shot Halloween event. On the 17th of November, we're selecting a Mr. St. Andrews that's run by our charity rep. And on the 24th of November, we're having our Christmas party in Fat Sam's in Dundee. And then, of course, we have the formal dinners on the 30th of November. In addition to all of those, we're going to have one sports social, one environmental event, and, of course, a classic FIFA charity tournament.
And obviously, one of the things you mentioned before about the name change is the Blackadder thing. It's got a certain humour to it.
Yeah.
What are people saying to you about the name change? Are they already making jokes about it? Is this fully there?
I mean, to be honest, the freshers have absolutely loved the name change. I mean, it's just the returning students who've complained to me saying, oh, it's only going to be Newhall, you know, when we're going to call it Newhall, we're not going to call it Agnes Blackadder. But, you know, I'd say give it some time.
Yeah. A few years and it'll change.
Yeah.
And one final question while you're here. Accommodation's obviously been a big issue across the university. Empty rooms has been a scandal, I suppose, the university has started. What's the situation in Blackadder? Are all your rooms occupied?
We have about 100 empty rooms.
Out of 600 in the hall?
Yes.
That's quite a lot. As a senior student, what's your view on that?
Well, I'm absolutely furious. I mean, the residential business services literally messed up. But hopefully by next semester we should have a few more, you know, junior study abroads coming in. So the spaces will fill up by next semester.
Yeah. And obviously you were talking about the community there and the events you're running. Yep. How are you finding the community in Hull?
The community is absolutely amazing. I mean, 67% of our hall consists of first year students. And so they're really eager to get involved, especially with the sports, you know, they put on the face paints and the cheer Blackadder. And since I'm here, I'll announce that we're in alliance now with Andrew Melville Hall. So we do cheer on Melville in our sports events.
And I understand that all the senior students have meetings together to discuss the various issues. Have you had one of these?
Yes, we've had two already.
Okay. Yeah. And what sort of issues are coming out of this? I guess accommodation is...
Well, laundry is probably the biggest issue after that.
Yeah. And laundry, I know, has been a big problem across all the halls. What's the situation in Blackadder with that?
The dryers tend not to work, and there's a problem with the key cards.
Yeah. And how are you finding the university's support for you on that? Are they being quite supportive, or are they sort of leaving you to it?
No. I mean, I've been absolutely supported by the Waldonial team and the university itself. I've been very happy.
Zeeshan, thank you for coming in today and thank you for talking to us about the change of name. That's a change of identity for Newhall, now Blackadder Hall. And so today, this programme, we've had a specific look at identity throughout. I'm joined now again by producer Carla, so we can have an overview of identity. And Carla, it's been a big theme here. How important do you think identity is for people, and how much do you think they actually need this to associate themselves with something?
I think identity is imperative. I'm from Northern Ireland, which has its own set of issues concerning identity. So I think it's really, really, really important. Especially cultural identity, particularly, which is what we've been looking at a lot today with the idea of the Scottish referendum and, you know, the coming together of the EU and things. I think it's really important to have a cultural identity. And, you know, you can see it here, how much being aware of this identity adds to your life. I mean, particularly in St Andrews, because we have everyone from everywhere, and they're all bringing their own bits and pieces. And it is something, something individual and something very important.
I'm interested, Zeeshan, you're still here with us, and you've had a change of identity. You've managed to push forward Newhall to Blackadder, and you said that some of the returning students are resisting it, as you might expect. Yeah. How do you find changing identity? How easy a process is that to go through? And obviously, we've been discussing on the programme today some far bigger examples of countries and can you have a European identity and things. Within Hull, what's your tips for changing an identity?
I mean, during the name-changing ceremony, I did emphasise that change is never easy. But I guess, you know, change is an integral part of success, so it's sort of about just word of mouth, or, you know, just promoting it at the same time and getting people excited.
I suppose it takes generational change to do it as well. And within the university scene, that's quite quick because people tend to come and go in halls within a year or two, and certainly 4 years in and out of the university. I suppose, Carla, if we're looking at nations, we're talking about a far larger degree of time. And perhaps if we go back to that European identity, actually, people born today will have different attitudes from parents and grandparents. Are we expecting people to feel more European as time goes on, or are we expecting them to maybe adopt another identity, or maybe none at all?
That's true. I think a lot of people actually today, sadly, I speak personally from my part of the world, a lot of people like to push aside identity because sometimes it can cause more bad than good, what with controversy and mixture of political opinions, and unfortunately in some cases violence also, but I think that people if people adopt you know, identity, that it will move forward. And of course, if the EU moves past these crises that they're having and becomes stronger, that European is an identity, a lot of people, even here in the British Isles, will be very, very happy to call themselves.
Yeah, and it's definitely possible to change identities, isn't it? And I suppose the thing that is strange, I suppose, about the argument for independence is actually how artificial we can see these identities are. You can see at the lowest possible level a building changes identity, and you can very quickly, through generational change and through just changing your publicity and changing people's habits, get people to feel a different thing. And we're saying about with the European identity, how that grows with each generation. The Scottish identity is one that goes back a long way. And how do you see the SNP playing this out and trying to push forward the fact that there's an historic identity here, and that that makes a difference for the future as well as the past?
Well, I think, I mean, they've tried a lot. They want, you know, Scotland has its own rich, you know, heritage and culture, which is separate from the rest of Britain. And I think, as many other, you know, cultures have done, which I know, like, for example, in Ireland, you have GAA and they promote language and sports and things like that. I think Scotland will, and the SNP, continue to do the same, to try to make people feel more Scottish than they were British, to name that first rather than British.
Carla, thank you. Identity will remain a big issue on the programme. And of course, it remains a big issue for many people in the UK who just haven't got quite an idea of what they should feel. We've been talking today about different identities. We started the programme with an interview from the former Prime Minister of the Czech Republic, Jan Fischer, talking about Euroscepticism and his views on the future of the EU. And then we had an interview from the SNP, Angus Miller, who was talking about the process we can expect to see over the next couple of years leading up to a referendum on Scottish independence in 2014. And then we were talking about European Union identity and how people's views towards the EU are changing. And finally, the programme today featured the senior student of Agnes Blackadder Hall, Zeeshan Karim, talking about the changes there over the past week. That's been Alexander Jones Live. Thank you for listening. There'll be more again next week. Remember, there's the latest from Star News every day at 5:30 and online anytime at standrewsradio.com. And on the website, you can also find the full programme available as a podcast. I'm Alexander Jones. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Tune in to Star, the University of St. Andrews radio station.
St. Andrews' only radio station.
This is Star.
Contact us here at the studio by buzzing the studio from www.standrewsradio.com.